There was nothing in it, except the stink of upholstery cleaner and carbonless copies of the rental agreement. Kramer had picked the car up at 1:32 that afternoon at Dulles Airport near Washington, D.C. He had used a private American Express card and received a discount rate. The start of rental mileage was 13:215. Now the odometer was showing 13:513, which, according to my arithmetic, meant he had driven 298 miles, which was about right for a straight-line trip between there and here. I put the paper in my pocket and relocked the car. Checked the trunk. It was completely empty. I put the key in my pocket with the rental paper and headed across the street to the bar. The music got louder with every step I took. 10 yards away, I could smell beer fumes and cigarette smoke from the ventilators. I threaded through parked vehicles and found the door. It was a stout wooden item, and it was closed against the cold. I pulled it open and was hit in the face by a wall of sound and a blast of thick hot air. The place was heaving. I could see 500 people and black-painted walls and purple spotlights and mirror balls. I could see a pole dancer on a stage and back. She was on all fours and naked apart from a white cowboy hat. She was crawling around, picking up dollar bills. There was a big guy in a black T-shirt behind a register inside the door. His face was in deep shadow. The edge of a dim spotlight beam showed me he had a chest the size of an oil drum. The music was deafening, and the crowd was packed shoulder to shoulder and wall to wall. I backed out and let the door swing shut, stood still for a moment in the cold air, and then walked away and crossed the street and headed for the motel office. It was a dismal place. It was lit with fluorescent tubes that gave the air a greenish cast, and it was noisy from the Coke machine parked at its door. It had a payphone on the wall and worn linoleum on the floor, and a waist-high counter boxed in with the sort of fake wood paneling people use in their basements. The clerk was on a high stool behind it. He was a white guy of about 20, with long unwashed hair and a weak chin. "Happy New Year," I said. He didn't reply. "You take anything out of the dead guy's room?" I asked. He shook his head.
"No."
"Tell me again."
"I didn't take anything."
I nodded. I believed him. "Okay," I said. "When did he check in?"
"I don't know. I came on at 10. He was already here."
I nodded again. Kramer was in the rental lot at Dulles at 1:32, and he hadn't driven enough miles to do much of anything except come straight here, in which case he was checking in around 7:30, maybe 8:30 if he stopped for dinner somewhere, maybe 9. If he was an exceptionally cautious driver. "Did he use a payphone at all?"
"It's busted."
"So how'd he get hold of the hooker?"
"What hooker?"
"The hooker he was poking when he died."
"No hookers here."
"Did he go over and get her from the lounge bar?"
"He was way the hell down the row. I didn't see what he did."
"You got a driver's license?" The guy paused.
"Why?"
"Simple question," I said. "Either you do or you don't."
"I got a license," he said.
"Show me," I said. I was bigger than his Coke machine, and all covered in badges and ribbons, and he did what he was told, like most skinny 20-year-olds do when I use that tone. He eased his butt up off the stool and reached back and came out with a wallet from his hip pocket. Flipped it open. His DL was behind a milky plastic window. It had his photograph on it, and his name and his address. "Okay," I said. "Now I know where you live. I'll be back later with some questions. If I don't find you here, I'll come and find you at home." He said nothing to me. I turned away and pushed out through the door and went back to my Humvee to wait. 40 minutes later, a military meat wagon and another Humvee showed up. I told my guys to grab everything, including the rental car, but didn't wait around to watch them do it. I headed back to base instead. I logged in and got back to my borrowed office and told my sergeant to get me Garber on the phone. I waited at my desk for the call to come through. It took less than 2 minutes. "What's the story?" he asked. "His name was Kramer," I said. "I know that," Garber said. "I spoke to the police dispatcher after I spoke to you. What happened to him?" "Heart attack," I said, "during consensual sex with a prostitute, in the kind of motel a fastidious cockroach would take pains to avoid." There was a long silence. "Shit," Garber said. "He was married." "Yes, I saw his wedding band and his West Point ring." "Class of 52, Garber said. "I checked." The phone went quiet. "Shit," he said again. "Why do smart people pull stupid stunts like this?" I didn't answer, because I didn't know. "We'll need to be discreet," Garber said. "Don't worry," I said. "The cover-up's already started. The locals let me send him to Walter Reed." "Good," he said. "That's good." Then he paused. "From the beginning, okay?" "He was wearing 12-core patches," I said. "Means he was based in Germany. He flew into Dulles yesterday. From Frankfurt, probably. Civilian flight for sure, because he was wearing Class A's, hoping for an upgrade. He would have worn BDUs on a military flight. He rented a cheap car and drove 298 miles and checked into a $15 motel room and picked up a $20 hooker." "I know about the flight," Garber said. "I called 12 Corps and spoke with his staff. I told him he was dead."
"When?"
"After I got off the phone with the dispatcher."
"You tell him how or where he was dead?"
"I said a probable heart attack, nothing more. No details, no location. Which is starting to look like a very good decision now."
"What about the flight?" I said.
"American Airlines yesterday. Frankfurt to Dulles. Arrived 1,300 hours with an onward connection 900 hours today. Washington National to LAX. He was going to an armored branch conference at Fort Irwin. He was an armored commander in Europe. An important one. Outside chance of making vice chief of staff in a couple of years. It's armored's turn next for vice chief. Current guy's infantry and they like to rotate. So he stood a chance. But it ain't gonna happen for him now, is it?"
"Eh, probably not," I said, "being dead and all."
Garber didn't answer that.
"How long was he over here for?" I said.
"He was due back in Germany inside a week."
"What's his full name?"
"Kenneth Robert Kramer."
"I bet you know his date of birth," I said, "and where he was born."
"So?"
"And his flight numbers and his seat assignments. And what the government paid for the tickets, and whether or not he requested a vegetarian meal, and what exact room Irwin VOQ was planning to put him in."
"What's your point?"
"My point is, why don't I know all that stuff, too?"
"Why would you?" Garber said. "I've been working the phones, and you've been poking around in a motel."
"You know what?" I said. "Every time I go anywhere, I've got a wad of plane tickets and travel warrants and reservations, and if I'm flying in from overseas, I've got a passport. And if I'm going to a conference, I got a briefcase full of all kinds of other crap to carry them in."
"What are you saying?"
"I'm saying there were things missing from the motel room. Tickets, reservations, passport, itinerary. Collectively, the kind of things a person would carry in a briefcase."
Garber didn't respond.
"He had a suit carrier," I said. "Green canvas, brown leather bindings. A buck gets 10, he had a briefcase to match. His wife probably chose them both. Probably got a mail order from L.L. Bean, maybe for Christmas 10 years ago."
"And the briefcase wasn't there?"
"He probably kept his wallet in it, too, when he was wearing Class A's. As many metal ribbons as this guy had, it makes the inside pocket tight."
"So?"
"I think the hooker saw where he put his wallet after he paid her. Then they got down to business, and he croaked, and she saw a little extra profit for herself. I think she stole his briefcase."
Garber was quiet for a moment. "Is this gonna be a problem?" he asked.
"Well, it depends what else was in the briefcase," I said.
I put the phone down and saw a note my sergeant had left me. "Your brother called. No message." I folded it once and dropped it in the trash. Then I headed back to my quarters and got 3 hours sleep. Got up again 50 minutes before first light.
I was back at the motel just as dawn was breaking. Morning didn't make the neighborhood look any better. It was depressed and abandoned for miles around. And quiet. Nothing was stirring. Dawn on New Year's Day is as close as any inhabited place gets to absolute stillness. The highway was deserted. There was no traffic. None at all. The diner at the truck stop was open, but empty. The motel office was empty. I walked down the road to the last but one room, Kramer's room. The door was locked. I stood with my back to it and pretended I was a hooker whose client had just died. I had pushed his weight off me and dressed fast and grabbed his briefcase and I was running away with it. What would I do? I wasn't interested in the briefcase itself. I wanted the cash in the wallet and maybe the American Express card. So I would rifle through and grab the cash and the card and ditch the bag itself. But where would I do that? Inside the room would have been best, but I hadn't done it there for some reason. Maybe I was panicking. Maybe I was shocked and spooked and just wanted to get the hell out fast. So where else? I looked straight ahead at the lounge bar. That was probably where I was going. That was probably where I was based. But I wouldn't carry the briefcase in there. My co-workers would notice, because I was already carrying a big purse. Hookers always carry big purses. They've got a lot of stuff to haul around. Condoms, massage oils, maybe a gun or a knife, maybe a credit card machine. That's the easiest way to spot a hooker. Look for someone dressed like she's going to a ball, carrying a bag like she's going on vacation. I looked to my left. Maybe I walked around behind the motel. It would be quiet back there. All the windows faced that way, but it was night, and I could count on the drapes being closed. I turned left and left again, and came out behind the bedrooms on a rectangle of scrubby weeds that ran the length of the building and was about 20 feet deep. I imagined walking fast and then stopping in deep shadow and going through the bag by feel. I imagined finding what I wanted and heaving the bag away into the darkness. I might have thrown it 30 feet. I stood where she might have stood and scoped out a quarter circle. It gave me about 150 square feet to check. The ground was stony and nearly frozen by overnight frost. I found plenty of stuff. I found trash and used needles and foil crack pipes and a Buick hubcap and a skateboard wheel. But I didn't find a briefcase. There was a wooden fence at the rear of the lot. It was about 6 feet tall. I jacked myself up on it and looked over. Saw another rectangle of weeds and stones. No briefcase. I got down off the fence and walked onward and came up on the motel office from the back. There was a window made of dirty pebbled glass that I guessed led into the staff bathroom. Underneath it were a dozen trashed air conditioners all stacked in a low pile. They were rusty. They hadn't been moved in years. I walked on and came around the corner and turned left into a weedy gravel patch with a dumpster on it. I opened the lid. It was 3/4 full of garbage. No briefcase. I crossed the street and walked through the empty lot and looked at the lounge bar. It was silent and locked up tight. Its neon signs were all switched off and the little bent tubes looked cold and dead. It had its own dumpster close by in the lot. Just sitting there like a parked vehicle. There was no briefcase in it. I ducked inside the greasy spoon. It was still empty. I checked the floor around the tables and the banquettes and the booths. I looked on the floor behind the register. There was a cardboard box back there with a couple of forlorn umbrellas in it, but no briefcase. I checked the women's bathroom. No women in it, no briefcase in it either. I looked at my watch and walked back to the lounge bar. I would need to ask someone face-to-face questions there, but it wouldn't be open for business for another 8 hours at least. I turned around and looked across the street at the motel. There was still nobody in the office. So I headed back to my Humvee and got there in time to hear a 1017 come in on the radio. Return to base. So I acknowledged and fired up the big diesel and drove all the way back to Byrd. There was no traffic, and I made it inside 40 minutes. I saw Kramer's rental parked in the motor pool lot. There was a new person at the desk outside my borrowed office, a corporal, the day shift. He was a small, dark guy who looked like he was from Louisiana. French blood in there, certainly. I know French blood when I see it.